Adventure and new friends are what awaits you in Starfleet, the world's largest Star Trek fan club. Starfleet, the International Star Trek Fan Association, is celebrating its 45th anniversary, and with over 4,000 members in 75 countries, it offers camaraderie, educational and philanthropy opportunities, and a unique membership experience modeled on the Starfleet organization from the TV shows and movies. To start your adventure today, visit www.sfi.org.
Greetings, my fellow shipmates. I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd, and this is Future Imperfect. But I'm not alone as I trek across the stars. I'm joined with my faithful XO,
Steve Megatron Phillips.
And of course, it wouldn't be Future Imperfect without two of my favorite guests on this show, from That Guy with the Glasses and ThatSciFiGuy.com.
That Sci-Fi Guy, Leo Thompson.
And Nick Wright. I actually don't have any kind of, like, you know, cool nickname or anything.
You're Phoenix Wright.
Phoenix Wright? No, that's another guy.
No, that's the other guy.
Objection!
Now, one of the things I've been trying to do on this show, we were supposed to do this show last week. Unfortunately, oh yeah, that's E3. Shit. So I kind of forgot about that. So it seems like we were always a week behind. So I'm going to actually date this episode so you know when it's recorded, but I'm going to make you work for it. Today's star date is 66935.4. Try and figure that out. Email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. I'll try and give you something if I can. So today's topic will be, well, something all of us are familiar with. This was one of my first experiences with Trek, and I know we've told the story many times. We're talking about Star Trek, The Next Generation, more or less as a whole. We're going to talk about the seasons and everything else, share our kind of stories with it, but also what it means as a show, what it means to the Trek franchise, and, well, where this series could go now that the Abramsverse is now two movies deep. Will they eventually reboot TNG? So I guess who wants to start our discussion point today? Don't everybody rush in at once. Okay, well, all right. I guess we'll kind of start. Oh, sorry, Leo, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, you know, I mean, to me, the show was, like, around when I was growing up. My parent, like, as a kid, my parents were Trekkies. I was kind of always more like, hey, Star Wars, you know. And so I watched a lot of it as a kid, but it wasn't until I kind of, like, you know, matured and got, you know, older and found Star Trek on my own that I kind of became a fan.
This is one of the shows that I've told this story on previous shows, so I'll just go through it very quickly. I kind of got into by accident. I remember finding random repeats on my satellite dish. My grade 7 teacher, Mr. Collins, loaned me a tape of the shows, and my friend Wayne and I used to talk about it all the time, and he would tape the shows for me off of television because he had cable, whereas I had satellite, but my parents would never let me watch the satellite between the hours of basically 6 p.m. and midnight. That's all my parents did, this watch TV. In fact, I'm pretty sure they're there right now. And it's one of those things that really caught my attention because it was one of the few shows where I could buy toys and watch the show at the same time. And I never felt once like the show was ever talking down to me. And it really got me interested in astronomy and hard sciences and all that things. Really wish I went into astronomy when I was younger, but unfortunately I suck at math. So that's what the show kind of meant to me. It was a gateway for sciences, and it made me feel like I was watching smarter television than fucking Friends or something equally as insipid.
Right. Yeah, I think before I saw Star Trek The Next Generation, I didn't even know that there were shows that were, you know, that involved and would actually trust you to think. You know, I started watching it when I was about 12 years old, and it was already almost over at that point. It was something that was really a refreshing change of pace, and like you, it got me interested in space and astronomy, and it didn't really work out that well for me, but, you know, I'm doing other things, so that's cool. But it's something that, you know, I never got any sleep because it came on at 10:35 every night, and I would stay up and watch it until 11:35, and then I would have to get up way early in the morning and go to school. So, that was responsible probably for me being late to school quite a bit. But it was worth it. My little black and white TV in my bedroom.
No regrets.
No. It's all worth it.
And Steve, what about you?
This I remember watching a lot, mostly at the dinner table with my family. This and reruns of the original series were pretty much how I got into Trek. Although I find this show to be a lot more enjoyable to me than any of the other ones, just for the simple fact that this is the one that was airing while I was young. So,
yep.
I remember a decent chunk of the show and certain characters kind of held with me over time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just liked a lot of the callbacks to the original series that were in here a lot of the new aliens and technology.
Actually, and that's something else I kind of want to jump into. What made you stay with the show? I mean, for me, it was the fact that it opened up a whole new world of things. Like you just mentioned, ships, technology, and even callbacks to the original series. One of the things I always liked about the show is when they did science, yes, some of it was technical garbly gook. In fact, if you watch the Season 3 Blu-ray special features inside the writer's room, they talk about the infamous technobabble generator, where they have three columns and like you pick each one and it works. Like the Heisenberg compensator buffer or some shit like that. For me, their space sciences were always routed in reality. Like they'd try and figure it out, although they'd get some of their numbers kind of messed up when you compare warp speeds and you look how far Voyager was stuck in the Delta Quadrant. In theory, they should have been able to cross that in like a year, maybe two. But I digress. It was always when they went to different planets, talking about different atmospheres, stuff that made up things. And even the medical science is really fascinated with me. And more or less the applications of what you could do with them. Like, you know that thing Dr. Crusher uses to seal up wounds?
Yeah.
I would seal people's assholes shut. That is the first terrible thing that I would do. This is why I'm not allowed near anything fun.
So what you're saying is you would pop them. You just
use tape like the kid in the Breakfast Club.
Oh, my God, you have no idea. Or I would find a way to like grow weird random organs out of people's backs. I would be sued for malpractice quite quickly. I was about to say, there's no lawyers in Star Trek. No, wait, I forgot the JAG they featured in Measure of a Man.
There are lawyers, yeah, Measure of a Man, yeah.
Yep.
Another thing that really kind of interested me, and I want to hear your guys' thoughts on this, it made Star Trek, or made the Federation feel like a real political body. Like there were divisions, you got to know what ranks meant. It wasn't just like, I'm the captain, I'm a lieutenant. No, it was like, here, I have to go up this chain of command, how it functions. It made it feel more like a Navy / kind of military, but with a scientific mandate. And I don't know, just something about that really attracted me to it.
That's true. Original series did kind of play a little more fast and loose with the ranks. They had like yeomen and, you know, all these different ranks that would show up once in one episode and never appear again. And they were really a lot more consistent in Next Gen. And I think overall it was just more developed.
It was always a little bit Navy-based, though, I think. Yeah, totally. You know, it's the idea of, you know, being out and on a ship. And
but you can be a Commodore now.
Yeah.
And this, yeah, Star Captain.
You know, I think where the show, like, and it was somewhere in one of the bonus features I was watching that, you know, Next Gen really started to hit its stride, I think, around Season 3. And that's kind of when it stopped trying to be the original series and sort of get its own direction. And one of the things that one of the writers said was that ultimately it's about the characters. And the situations that they get into are interesting and blah, 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 and the technology and all that stuff. But ultimately, it's about the characters and their relations. And that's really how you tell a good story, you know?
Yeah, well, like, that's something the original series never felt. I mean, yeah, there were characters, but they never felt as deep as I wanted them to.
Well, like, and this is something that we kind of talked about in a previous show at some point. It all kind of changed when Roddenberry sad as it is to say, passed on and kind of wasn't the lead of anything anymore when they went to...
Right.
And I think in the beginning, for instance, the cast and crew started off with 9 crew members on the bridge. Well, if you count Wesley.
Counting the ever-rotating crew of chief engineers in the first season?
Well, yeah, but I mean, as far as like the core people that were right, yeah. throughout the show, yeah. and then in season 2, it goes down to 8 people, and then by season, you know, 3, or no, not season 3, season 5, you're down to 7 people in the main cast. So, I mean, it's as it goes, they kind of keep the people that are actually important to the show and kind of... It gets more refined as it goes down instead of, and I do agree, it's less the original series and more its own thing, which definitely helps it. But when they got the collars on their uniforms, that's around the time mm-hmm. that it started getting good.
Yeah. Which is really funny. I just got, you know, finished watching season 3 on the Blu-rays, and, you know, I'm into, like, costuming a lot more now than I was in any previous times that I'd watched the show. And I'd noticed that every main cast, and basically anybody with a speaking role, had the new uniforms with the collars and, you know, without the striped in the middle of the shoulder. But any crew member on the ship with the old uniform is not going to say anything. They might say, "Yes, Captain," as they walk, like the scene starts and they're talking to someone and they're like, "Aye, sir." And as
they, why are you know, wearing that old uniform? Like,
but you, it's funny, there's these people wearing these old uniforms and you can tell instantly, like, that person's not going to say anything.
He's going to die.
It's almost like the old 80s cartoons when there'd be like a line of buttons and one of them would be a different color and you could be like, "Oh, that one's the one that's going to get pressed."
One of the things that I also kind of liked about the series, about specifically Star Trek The Next Generation, is it was the sense of scope. To me, the galaxy in the original Star Trek never felt as big as it did in TNG. They talk about it'll take us a few days at high warp to get somewhere, or stuff like that. And it just, it felt like the Federation felt like a real entity, like they're reaching out literally across the Alpha Quadrant, and how the Klingons and the Romulans exist in the Beta Quadrant, more or less, just to give you an idea of scope of how big everybody's space is. And you look at some of the maps for some of these star charts they have for Star Trek to give you an idea where certain planets are in relation to Earth. And I don't know, there's just something really interesting about that, too, just because it makes the world bigger, gives you more possibilities for stories. I felt this series was never confined, really, by budget, so to speak. I mean, the budgets got bigger per episode as the series went on. I mean, especially after they got free of kind of network control. I think their budget was up to $2 million per episode. Think about what $2 million can buy when you really think about it. And there never were any real sets on TNG that I ever felt really cheesy. There were ones that were beautifully, you know, immersive, and you'd get these wonderful matte paintings too.
A couple of those first season sets were a little cheesy. The episode with the Ferengi.
Okay, that'll give
you. Well, the first 2 seasons though were 80s cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like Mike said, they had a limited budget as well. They got more, once they had more money, they obviously used it well. I mean, we live in an age of great television now where we have, you know, things like Game of Thrones and Walking Dead. We expect excellence, but back then that was a rarity. We didn't have anything else really on the air at the time that looked as good as, you know, third season, fourth season Star Trek The Next Generation did.
Yeah.
Well, in Star Trek The Next Generation, when I don't think people really took it seriously until, and at the same time didn't see it as a dramatic, serious show until the best of both worlds.
Right.
Which I loved. You ever, I saw like in one of the bonus features they were talking about, the guy who wrote that episode was kind of like, he kind of felt like he had half a foot out the door. He wrote that episode to be like, hey, whoever comes in next, have fun figuring this out. And then they managed to like to convince him to stay, and then he had to figure out how to, like,
oh crap, how do I get him out of this?
It's a wonderful little tidbit.
I mean, one of the things, another thing too, I mean, to kind of talk about some of the storytelling, because there's a wonderful special feature on the third season Blu-ray where they talk about inside the writer's room for this series. Just some of the high concept ideas they'd have, while they sound stupid when you say them, would get better and better, and how they would, they weren't selecting scripts out of normal solicitation, but if they liked your script, they'd call you. But they couldn't use it, but they'd call you anyway, and it would eventually be rewritten so they could get around that shit. And I remember one of the episodes out of the third season I love so much, because I think it's one of the best of the series, and it's called The Offspring. And and if you want to explain it really simply, Data has a baby. And there's just something about the performance of the woman that, that plays Lao I really like. And when she's dying because her neural net's breaking down,
yeah,
that's tremendously sad. And I
Also, that's Brent Spiner's daughter.
Really?
Oh, is it really?
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's why it was such a touching, close, dramatic
scene.
The character. More you know.
Like, there was just, I mean, a lot of the, about that scene that really works is, despite Data not understanding the emotion, the fact that she's gone, but he integrates her memories into himself. I really like that. And that's the thing about Star Trek, is that some of the situations from an outsider may appear completely ridiculous, but they never, you never feel outside of it. This was sci-fi television that took itself seriously, as opposed to other things that might have been on the air at the time. Like, I mean, before this, the only serious sci-fi show I can think of was the early Battlestar Galactica and Battlestar 1981, or whatever the hell it was called. And Star Trek did something where you believed in these characters, you wanted to know more about these characters, you would develop attachments, I think, more so than any sci-fi series had done previous to it, because I don't know, it's almost like you knew these people as acquaintances or as friends. And I know that sounds really weird, but follow me through here. That you just, you knew what certain characters would do. You knew what certain characters were feeling. I mean, Picard's the kind of guy I would look up to as an uncle or something. Mm-hmm. Someone like Riker. Totally. Someone like Riker would be willing to come down to your quarters at 3 o'clock in the morning if you've got a problem, and he would talk to you.
No, Riker's like the fun uncle.
Yeah.
Picard is the responsible uncle.
Yeah, as somebody who grew up without a really strong father figure in the house, Picard kind of filled those shoes, at least as somebody to look onto as an example. If I'm thinking about, well, what should I do in this situation? Well, let me think about what Picard would do in this situation. That's probably the right thing. Now, whether I'm going to do that right thing or not, that may be a different story. I might go the Riker route.
I've definitely thought to myself, what would Picard do, a good number of times?
And that's something I don't think a lot of sci-fi shows have really gotten right since. Now, I know you could make arguments for like for other television shows, but this one felt the most organic. I mean, I see Geordi as the best friend, who's intensely interested in stuff. Data would be he's also the best friend, but he's a different type of best friend. One, he's almost like the impressionable little brother because he's so curious about everything. Mm-hmm. Troy, I don't know how I describe her, basically as the girl who would listen to you. Crusher very much felt like the mom figure, but she knew how to be, you know, kind of fun too at times. Worf, very competitive, but fun, too. And that's something that I don't think a lot of other television series, at least in sci-fi, really embrace the fun side of it. And the only other character I can think that's kind of fun from a really respected sci-fi franchise that was on television, I'd say Starbuck from Battlestar Galactica was fun, and some of the other kind of Viper pilots. But with Star Trek, everybody's likable, except Dr. Pulaski. Fuck.
Except for Dr. Pulaski. Which, we did figure out, like, that's...
Did you say Data? Yeah.
They wanted her to be Bones, and it doesn't work. Like, Bones and Spock picked on each other back and forth, as where Data kind of would just take it.
Because he can't get the joke.
Yeah, so it kind of turned her into a bully, picking on the special kid.
Yeah.
She was just a bitch.
Yeah, and that was, you know, she only had one season, and I figure that, you know, maybe they could have pulled a Bashir with her and make it so that you really don't like her at first, but over the seasons, you grow to appreciate her more and see her develop as a character, but well, we only got to see her for a little bit, and everybody was like, you know what, screw her, bring back Crusher.
Yeah, and in that scene, like, the infamous scene of, you know, Data, you know, my name is Data and all that stuff, you know, that scene, what, like, it closed... And she goes to, like, Data goes to leave, and she calls him Data again, and she's like, I mean, Data, whatever. And if she hadn't just thrown the, like, whatever at the end of it, it would have been, like, a good character moment. It was like, wow, you almost grew there, and then you backpedaled.
He should have just started calling her Dr. Pool Askey.
But yeah, I mean, I really think, like, out of characters that you should give a shit about, she was the one people least gravitated. And it's not that she gave a bad performance. In fact, there's a number of
her
episodes. No, she's a great actor.
Yeah, like, there's a number of her episodes I really like. Just people liked Crusher more, and I think there was a warmth to her. Whereas, like you said, Pulaski's very much meant to be that Bones comparison. And it never came across as sincere. It always had a little bit of a hint of meanness to it. Not much, just enough.
Well, you know, and like, you know, she was a great actress, but you know, that can happen. Like, honestly, on Deep Space Nine, Major Kira, like, I hate that character. Yeah. I love Nana Visitor. She's a wonderful, happy person, and you know, which just proves that, like, she was acting, you know, and she played a character that I just hate.
Even if she was sometimes directed poorly.
Yeah.
Like, all every time Kira cried, I just cringed.
But I mean, yeah, you know, like, like I said about Pulaski, you know, she played the part well. She was acting, just kind of an unlikable character.
Now, to talk about characters in Star Trek, especially TNG, is to talk about some of the villains of this series. And one of the best villains I think it's ever been created for Star Trek, and arguably, I think, in sci-fi in general, John DeLancey himself, Q.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh my God! That's, I was hoping, like, you were going in that direction. Villain.
I've never met a more charismatic individual. Like, I interviewed him for the My Little Pony Brony documentary a couple of months ago,
which he played you on.
He is such a personable guy. Like, literally, he extrudes that kind of confidence. And when he plays Q and he's talking to Picard, I love that he's that lovable asshole.
Kind of like, I just loved his character. That was such a memorable way that he portrayed that. I don't think that anybody could have topped that.
Oh no! I mean, like, honestly, if they wanted to bring Q into, like, a new show or movie or whatnot, it still needs to be John DeLancey. Like, they're.
I would love to see J.J. Abrams use him, but then again, he'd be surrounded by fucking lens flares.
Yeah, lens flares.
Well,
don't bother me.
He made his own lens flares too, so
that's true. Whenever he, you know, snapped his fingers, which it kind of made the universe with Star Trek. I'm trying to find the right way to describe this. Like, we could talk to a god, and the god would actually give us an answer, but the god wanted to challenge us, especially when you look at the series finale for TNG, All Good Things, when he says to Picard, you've opened up a new way of perception. Think about this. Humanity is about ready to do something really great. Don't waste the opportunity. And in the first episode he appears, he declares us this brutal, savage race, and we're basically slated for deletion, so to speak. And I like that. The fact that, you know, someone challenged us and we rose to the occasion. Q, while he's a jerk, I wouldn't necessarily call him evil.
Yeah.
I mean, to give him a D&D alignment, I might say chaotic. No.
Neutral.
Like, yeah. Chaotic neutral.
He's like an anti. Yeah. He's like an anti-hero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, sometimes his actions lead to bad things happening. For example, when he put the Enterprise right in front of the Borg ship. But think how many lives he saved had that encounter not happened. We would have been caught completely off guard.
So, come on now. We all know exactly what Q's character was. He was a troll.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, you mad, Picard?
it's like a guy poking him with a stick.
Yeah.
Does this hurt yet?
Oh, I love the fact when Sisko hits him in DS9. And he says, Jean-Luc never hit me. I'm not Picard.
I am not. And you hit me.
And then he sexually harasses Janeway.
Which is awesome. I was just thinking about that scene. And that's something, too. He always tries to prey on, like, Jean-Luc, he definitely played the troll. Tried that shit with Sisko. He wasn't having it.
That's because he got punched
in the
face.
That's why he never came back to DS9.
He never came back to DS9. Yeah, no, he didn't. And, you know, most of these trolls on the internet, you know, they're trolls because the internet removes the ability, like, the fear of, I might get punched for saying this. And that's exactly what happened. He showed up, he tried to troll Sisko, and he wasn't fun. He hit me. Well, I'm not going to go mess with that guy.
So Q has been summed up as YouTube comments.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Someone needs to draw this.
Oh, no, I've already made that graphic.
Other villains that would show up on the show would be the Duras sisters.
Yeah.
I'm glad they died.
Yeah, I'm fucking glad they're splattered somewhere.
Shit happened earlier. They didn't deserve a big screen death.
Some of the Cardassian villains, I mean, they would introduce...
Gold Ducat.
Wonderful character. Love that guy. Trying to think of who else. I like how they made Tasha Yar's Romulan counterpart bad or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because, I mean, they could have totally come back with a whole, oh, well, she's Romulan, but she's still Tasha Yar, so we can make her good. But they didn't, so.
Yeah.
Now, why did Denise Crosby, leave the show?
I actually talked to her about it once. She kind of felt like she was standing around on the bridge saying, I, Captain, and wasn't really getting a chance to shine. And honestly, a lot of the females on the show during the first season kind of felt similar. But I guess what she kind of didn't know at the time was that in Star Trek, and I think that happened in the original series too, all of the main cast get episodes to really show their chops.
Yep.
And she just thought she could do better at the time.
She happened to get some of the crappier episodes.
Though. Yeah.
Like, she had the one where they went to the horrible stereotype African planet.
Yeah, the African stereotype planet, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why they ended up bringing her back for yesterday's Enterprise. And
yeah. Later on, when they were able to do something, you know, more fitting for her, they were able to bring her back.
And she didn't necessarily request that her character get killed. She was just like, I think that there are better acting jobs for me out there because I don't feel like I'm being used here and I'd kind of like to leave. And they said, all right, well, we'll just kill you.
Let's see. Black goo. That seems like a good way to die.
Do you think she ever regretted that, seeing the success of the show later?
Oh, I know she did.
And that really sucks, too. I mean, I didn't mind Tasha's character, and I kind of would have wanted to know what would have happened with her. But then again, Worf just became a better fleshed-out character in that role.
Well, and then that led to him growing in DS9.
Yeah. And that's cool to watch a character grow across two television series, and I can't think of many.
It happened with O'Brien, too.
To be fair,
Worf on Deep Space Nine is almost an entirely different character. And they're both very unique, interesting, good characters. But
he mellowed out.
It's not the same Worf.
Mm, yeah.
Well, he mellowed out.
Well, he got way more into Klingon-y things and... I don't know.
In TNG and All Good Things anyway, if you look at the future universe, he was headed towards Klingon politics again anyway. So
yeah.
It was just kind of a natural transition showing him going back that direction.
Well, like I said, they're both very good, interesting characters. I just kind of feel like it's almost a different
separation between the two.
Yeah.
Now, can you think of any other characters that have grown across two distinctly different television series? I can't think of many that have jumped over.
I mean, just off the top of my, obviously, you know, like you said, O'Brien, who, thank goodness he did, because he really spent like, oh, you're doing a transport. Okay, I get three lines in this episode, you know.
Well, so he was. He was on the con or on the transporter.
Yeah. But I mean, I never really watched it, but
not outside the Whedonverse.
Right. I was saying, yeah, like there was like Angel and stuff.
Okay. I never even considered Angel, that.
Yeah, Buffy, Eliza Dushku's character in those. There's a lot going on between those two series.
Hmm. Well, I'm kind of glad you brought that up, because now I feel kind of stupid.
well, that's also, you know, before that, there was just Star Trek. It's one of those things where we have these things today, and we kind of take them for granted. Like, well, you know, we live in a world that Joss Whedon is making TV. Well, he was making TV, and now he's making awesome movies.
It's not like it was incredible. I mean, there was, like, Joni Loves Chachi and stuff like that, you know, like, you know, spin-off shows, you know.
Well, yeah, if you're talking about, like, you know, sitcom-type stuff.
Yeah,
but actually fully developing the character, right? So just getting cheap laughs.
But say, I guess you could argue Frasier.
Yeah, definitely Frasier.
But yeah, I mean, in terms of dramatic television, yeah, it was pretty much this game. All right, well, we're actually starting to run out of time, surprisingly, and this didn't quite go the way that I expected it to, because we spent more time talking about the characters and relationships more so than I did anything, and that's.
And like I said, that is ultimately, I think, what made the Next Generation as good as it was the fact that it was very character-based.
Yeah, they were very well-defined.
Yeah, I mean, there might be some goofy episodes, but at the same time, at least you got character moments that meant something in every episode. And you kind of grew with like these guys, and in the end, they felt like a big family that, you know, worked together and respected each other. And I don't know, there's just something very powerful about that. And I'm really glad that Gene Roddenberry brought this series back. And then after his death, it carried forward and it just got better. I mean, obviously, without him, we wouldn't have had it.
Well,
I wonder what the ground of sci-fi would look like had Star Trek The Next Generation not come along.
Well, for instance, I want to make a... And I'll probably get panned for it anyway, but it's regardless... I'm going to make a Transformers reference, only in the fact that when you stop and think about it, TNG is to the original series what Beast Wars was to Generation One. Each one of those shows kind of harkened back to the original.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
And they revitalized the franchise to where it spawned countless TV series from it and countless films. I mean, both of them happened to revitalize, and being that TNG is such a strong show, it kind of made it hard for the rest of them to follow after the fact.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Kept them on their toes.
Yeah, and that's something I'm so glad, actually, you kind of made that reference, because stuff like that really forces a franchise to take a look at itself, thinking, okay, we've done this. We've done the quote-unquote toy commercial. Can we do better? And I'm glad that Star Trek The Next Generation said, okay, we can't do Star Trek Phase 2, but we can do this. What can we do? And literally the sky was the limit. And there's a lot of good episodes in Season 1 that I like. I mean, my favorite is the one in the holodeck with Cyrus Redblock. Can't think of his name. Or I can't think of the episode name off the top of my head. And obviously, Encounter at Farpoint was outdoing network shows. I think it had something like 26 million viewers its first night. And that was 20 years after the original series had left there. And obviously, we talked about Star Trek conventions on this show that have kept that fandom alive. Yeah. And I really wonder, like I just said, what would happen to sci-fi if we didn't have this. So thank you, Gene Roddenberry, and the entire creative team behind this. You've given us something wonderful, something enduring, and even to a point, the show is absolutely timeless, because it'll be regarded just as high now as it will be in 20 years, because of the strength of the storytelling, the characters, the relationships, and that sense of wonder I think this series brought to a lot of audiences and a lot of people. I know there was a fan recently that talked to Patrick Stewart and got him to bring out something really... personal to him, and that's because this woman was a fan of Star Trek and wanted to thank him for that. So this thing saves lives. I mean, there's a part in the Trekkies documentary, I think it's the first one, with Denise Crosby,
which she helmed that documentary, which that was like her project.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. I'd love to see a follow-up to that, but I guess
I believe she actually did a second one, didn't she?
She did a second one, but not a third one.
Right,
but then again, how much further can you really take the idea?
Yeah.
This woman said, I was going to kill myself. And then James Doohan, Scotty, wrote back to her and says, no, you're not. I want you to come. I think he called her or something like that, and said, you better come to the next convention. And eventually, over the course of years, they lost touch. But she wrote back and found out that she became an engineer because of him. So, and, you know, I'm glad that Star Trek saves lives in a way, just because it is such a thing that every one of us can gather around and do our own thing with. So I guess final words on this, guys. I mean, I pretty much just gave you mine. So let's start with Steve.
Overall, I have to say that TNG is, to me, the most enjoyable out of any of the Trek series. It's got the most kind of controversial stuff in it. It's got the most diverse cast. I would have to argue based on the fact it's got many aliens in the group. And then you have just so many touching, deep, dramatic storylines in the show that it's kind of hard not to not only learn something and see the science in it, but to also be able to take it seriously.
Leo.
I wouldn't say it's not my favorite Star Trek. That probably goes to Deep Space Nine. But I mean, without it, there wouldn't have been a Deep Space Nine. You know, it definitely, you know, laid that groundwork and, you know, allowed everything after it to come, you know, and like you said, inspired all these other things. And it's definitely a very important quintessential part of the franchise.
Well, I would say, yeah, it actually is my favorite. So after one up you, sorry. But yeah, it's definitely was precedential, and you know, just so much that we have on TV today, not just the Star Trek series, but basically all, you know, a lot of different sci-fi and fantasy shows that came after it were influenced by its, if not itself, its success, but just the magic of the characters themselves and the fact that, you know, today, 25 years later, or however long it's been now, God, we can still get together and go to a movie theater just because we want to see an episode that we've seen 100 times on a big screen and get together with a bunch of different people to go out and do that. It really says a lot about this show, and it's going to, like you said, it's just going to keep on. And 20 years from now, it's going to still be respected for the really high-quality work that it is.
Well, I mean, what more can we say about this show? And like I said, I'm very glad this show turned into something more organic than what I had originally planned. I mean, we had planned originally talking about, like I said, episodes and everything else, but this turned into more about the characters and the cultural significance this thing has had. So will we talk about Star Trek The Next Generation again? You damn right we will. In fact, that kind of brings up what we're going to be talking about next month on the show. And if you and Nick are available, you're welcome to join us. We're going to be talking about Commander Data as a character and Brent Spiner as an actor. And I'll reach out to him and see if he'll do an interview with us. I give you no promises, but you never know. And I'd love
to ask him about his web series. He'd probably bite.
Fresh Hell? Yeah.
And
it's just funny.
If you've never watched Fresh Hell, watch it.
Plug.
Send me a link to that, and we'll definitely check it out. I'll put it in the episode notes below. So anyway, guys, like I said, this show has been brought to you by SFI.org, Starfleet, the world's largest Star Trek online fan club. Wonderful organization, does a lot of really cool work. And hopefully you've got a chance to sign up for it. In fact, I need to catch up on my Starfleet Academy courses at some point. I've been really slacking there. But has anybody else got any projects they wish to plug since we are here?
Me, for instance, I'm over on Geekcast Radio doing a ton of the Star Trek film reviews on MWire. Kevin and I just started the first one of the motion picture and went through our likes and dislikes of the film. And that's starting out the 12 film review set.
I know I've just mentioned I've had a little bit of a lull in Sci-Fi Guy episodes. You know, I've had some other projects that I was kind of working on and whatnot, but we're definitely rolling back into getting those coming out a little bit more.
Well, guys, like I said, be sure to check out everyone's work here, thatscifiguy.com and thatguywithglasses.com and geekcastradio.com, right, Steve?
Yes.
Perfect. All right, guys. Well, for Future Imperfect, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd with
Steve Megatron Phillips.
That sci-fi guy.
And Nick.
And until next time, my fellow shipmates, live long and prosper.